why in the world am I out here doing this? You know, especially around mile, I don't know, 35 or 40, I started to get like, all right, I've been out here long enough. You know, it's been what, 7, 8 hours. And I was like, I'm ready to be done. You know, you get to that point. And I think for everybody, it's going to be different on a different day too. But for me, I was like, it's hot. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or so. And, you know, I'm just ready to be done. And why, like, what is keeping me out here? And kind of going back to your why, you know, I was realizing, okay, well, part of it was actually to kind of prove not only to myself, but I think to others in my life, like, I can do this, you know, I got this.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome to the show, the Ultra Marathon Mindset. My guest this week is Megan Flanagan. She is an ACE certified personal trainer, worksite wellness consultant, a running coach. She is the founder of Strong Runner Chicks organization and podcast. And she is also an ultra runner. And she just recently completed a 50-mile trail run and active on Instagram. So I follow her. You get to see her adventures there. And so welcome to the show, Megan. Glad to have you.
Thanks, Eric. Happy to be on. Excited to chat with you.
Yes. I kind of look at people's Instagram and see the adventures and people who have exciting things. It's like, wow, there's somebody I would like to talk to. And so that's how I contacted you, and you were gracious enough to make time to come on. And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'd say I'm pretty early in my ultra career, but I have a lot more adventures to come. So,
well, that's the thing about ultra running. I mean, there's a whole bunch of adventures out there that you can pick from, multi-day, all the way from 50K all the way up to, I mean, you know, 250, 300 miles and more. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. It sounds like you've been around the block.
Well, you know, I am a relatively new ultra runner. I started, about 3 years ago, went from couch to 50K. Went from couch to 50 miles in a year. It was kind of ambitious, but I've heard other people who've done that similar things. Since you said you're relatively new to ultra running, tell a little bit about how did you get started as a runner and then also making the jump into ultra marathons?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was pretty active growing up as a kid and really loved running, just gravitated towards it in middle high school and then ended up running in college. So having that collegiate running experience kind of laid the foundation, always gravitating towards the longer days. I loved long run days and cross country for the sake of being out in the woods and conquering new terrain and, you know, getting to see new places. So it was just a natural fit after college to continue running and seek out trail running. And I actually went to Utah for graduate school, which if you've been to Utah, it's just beautiful there. It's hard not to run a trail when you're out there. So really got into trails when I was out there and obstacle course racing as well, which has some ultra, you know, ultra distances, a lot of ultra runners that do both. Mm-hmm. And then I now live in Portland, Oregon. We'll be moving to Colorado soon. So ultra running has been kind of my way to not only connect to different communities that I've been a part of, but also to kind of immerse myself in new places and really get to see different terrain wherever I go.
Mm-hmm. So did you jump right from college into trail running then as and then ultra distances?
I did. Yeah. I jumped into trails and I wasn't too sure about doing an ultra. I wanted to do a road marathon, which I did pretty soon after. But, you know, something about ultra distances was so enticing, but also pretty terrifying. And had the privilege to meet some great ultra runners early on. I was in Logan, Utah. So big names like Amanda Basham and Jeff Browning were out there. And they really just inspired me. I joined them for a 16-mile long run, which wasn't much, but they were training for Western States at the time. And that was a 100-mile distance race. And I'm like, you know, I'm not sure I'll ever do 100, but I may try a 50K. And I sure did the next year. So yeah, it did kind of plant the foundation, I think, to see other people doing it and knowing that it wasn't it wasn't unfeasible or way out of range. You know, it was something I could do and work up to.
So was 100 kind of an intimidating number for you when you first heard about it?
Yeah, I think so. And it probably still is. I have a few friends that are training for their first, but I'm sure it'll come soon, you know, if I continue. It's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Keep adding distance.
I tell people that the people you hang around with, I mean, they say that you kind of become like the people that you are with. And if you hang around people who think it's natural to run 100 miles, you're probably going to end up doing that.
Yeah, it just happens. Yeah.
So were you trained as a fitness professional? Is that what you went to college for?
Somewhat, yeah. So I went to college with nutrition and psychology. I was always fascinated by mindset, which is, you know, we know mental training is key for success in ultra distances. So that and nutrition and fueling well. So I really wanted to know more about those components. I'd grown up studying nutrition just or fitness and, you know, exercise science on my own and learning as much as I could about running and sport. And so pursued my personal training certification, trained some clients for, you know, 5K, 10K distances. And now I train and coach for ultra running as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So that's what you do full time?
Not full time, actually. Okay. That's my passion. Yeah. I also, I do worksite wellness consulting. So,
okay.
You know, some of that's involved with like helping employee wellness initiatives. And it's kind of fun to be able to see how that ties into workplace well-being and how people can, you know, cheer each other on within a workplace to train for certain distances.
So the workplace wellness includes exercise as well as nutrition then?
So somewhat
more of a comprehensive,
yeah.
Kind of a comprehensive thing.
Yeah,
so do absolutely. You find people in the workplace who are interested in starting to run? Is that something that
I would say so? Yeah. I think you can do a lot with your office, you know, getting people to sign up for a charity run together. And I've certainly had that fun experience of doing like those lunch runs together. That's been nice. Then you don't feel like the only crazy person that's training all the time. So,
because I mean, I've been with the running community for several years now. And so it seems natural to me. And so every once in a while, you know, I run into people who are just—it's inconceivable to just go out and run a short distance. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So, what do you, when someone comes to you and who's like maybe has met you at the office environment and finds out kind of what you do, what do you tell people who are like, well, you know, I might do.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I just told my supervisor at work last week, I'm doing a 50-mile race this weekend. It's like, do I want to say that or should I just leave out the extra zero, just say 5K?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's something I don't just go around saying because it's like, I'm not trying to brag. It's just like, oh, what are you doing this weekend? Well, my whole day tomorrow is going to be out on the trails. So, you know, it's just kind of how it goes. But I do think people are also fascinated by it. They admire it and want to know more about it. And, you know, there's other things that I would probably never do. Like, I don't know, just I'm not a great swimmer, for instance. If somebody said they're going to go swim like 30 miles, I'd say they're crazy. But yeah, so, you know, we all have our talents. And I think it's pretty cool to be able to share that in the workplace too.
Yeah. I had a guest on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he is working to set the world record for the most push-ups done in 365 days.
Wow.
Awesome. 1.5 million push-ups in 365 days. And I'm like, that's something, I mean, I that's not something that I have a desire to do. And, you know, wouldn't say it's impossible, but I'm like, wow, that's
how many is that a day? That's my question.
4,000 and something, I think.
Wow. I thought it was going to be a few hundred, but yeah, you spend a lot of your time doing pushups.
Yeah. He ran a 50K and did 4,000 pushups.
Wow.
All at one time. So yeah, there are people who do things like that. I ran across a lady on Facebook who's working to set the world record for the most ultras done in a year. And so it just was fascinating what people, the things that people take on as challenges. I'm like, what was it that made you, I guess, go from that? Did you do a 50K then before you did a 50, 50 mile?
Yeah, I did. I kind of eased my way into it. Of course, my coach was like, oh, are you thinking about 100, you know, after the 50 mile? It's like, maybe 100K first. But yeah, you know, tried a 50K and really loved that distance. I did another one of those earlier this year, kind of coming back from that whole COVID phase where we didn't have a whole lot going on. Mm-hmm. Did it like a casual 50K there. And then last year, I actually did the Timberline Trail, which is around Mount Hood. That's a really great one if you're out in the Pacific Northwest. About 42 miles, 10,000 or 11,000 feet of gain, and, you know, various conditions and terrain. And I did that with a couple of friends, and I was pretty intimidated. You know, I was really nervous that morning when we were driving up there, because going from 50K to 42 miles with all that vert was a lot. I thought it was going to be a lot. Yeah. And it turned out really well, actually. I mean, I found that with fueling and the right mindset, those things, the training took care of itself. I mean, really, having that strong foundation, led us to finish. We didn't finish in the time we wanted to, but of course it's a group effort. So if one person's not having a great day or feels sick, we stuck together and we ended up, you know, it took us a long time, I'll just say.
not something you're going to share.
14 hours, but 14 hours. I think if I had a great day, it could have been sub 10. So, and then
with the vertical, that kind of vertical is a whole different thing than if you're running on rails.
We weren't moving, or we got totally lost. So that really prepared me, I think, to know that this is going to be an adventure and not to set like too much of a pressure on myself to perform.
So what 50 miler did you do then?
I did Mary's Peak 50 out in Blodgett, Oregon, which is right outside Corvallis. You can kind of see the coast from there, although it's a little ways away, up in the mountains. And yeah, that was a great one. I really enjoyed it.
So it was a mountain 50 mile.
Somewhat. Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't say it was too high in the mountains, but.
So what kind of vertical did you have in your 50 mile?
I've got a growling dog.
Oh. Somebody at the door?
No, he has no reason to do that. I apologize. Just like, that's not me growling in the background.
I didn't hear it. So
maybe he can hear you. Well, that's good. So yeah, it was not a whole lot of, in terms of elevation profile, I mean, I think the highest we got up to was 3,000 or 4,000 feet. And then total, it was about 9,000 to 10,000 feet of gain. So still quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But not excessive. I mean, there's,
Yeah. It's surprising how much the course profile can change races though. Like I went in thinking, I was more concerned about the uphills, and it turned out for me, I love the uphills actually. And it was the downhills that actually were pretty painful, I would say, to go down, because they weren't very soft. So some of the course profile was really rocky and hard on your feet. So that kind of got to you.
So you had some fairly steep, I mean, the steep downhills can really, really be difficult to, if you have a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there's a race in Oklahoma it's called the Outlaw, and it's 100 miles, and the total vert is more than Leadville.
Wow.
And so it's, but we were talking, we had some friends, we were discussing it. It's enough of it is hardly runnable, just because it's so rocky and so much up and down. And this is it's more of a power hike for the entire time. So that makes a huge difference. You know, what the course profile
really does.
Looks like. Mm-hmm. So what kind of preparation did you do for your 50 mile? What was your going into it, you know, you'd already done though a 40 something. So
yeah, I'd done a 40 something the previous year. So I knew like last July I had that under my belt, and then had a 50K last year as well. And then had this 50K that was actually just, you know, I don't know if I'd recommend this to anyone. It had been like 4 or 5 weeks prior. But I knew going into that, I would save myself, you know, to be able to perform then a month or so later at this 50 miler. So it kind of worked out well, because it built this confidence of, I can do a 50K and, you know, about 6 hours on this hilly course. So I can go into this 50 feeling strong. And I would say I could have done a little more training. I mean, I always think, you can do a little more in certain areas. And I tend to play it pretty conservative. I've never had an injury in my 13 years of running, and I've been happy about that. So it's just like playing it smart, not overextending too much. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you always think you can get a little bit more out of yourself. So that was a lot of back-to-back long runs. I'd say kind of a weekend warrior and a Wednesday warrior, trying to get some kind of midweek, you know, workout long run, and also the weekends. And then, you know, about 5 to 6 days of training. Yeah, closer to six most weeks. And, you know, strength training, continue to do that to stay strong and handle the hills. And that's kind of the bulk of my training, though. Do a little bit of biking. And, you know, I think having a good support system and friends that train really got me through a lot of the long runs, too, and trying out new trails.
Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of runners, I mean, when it comes to talking about strength training, it's one of the things everyone says we know we should do. Mm-hmm. But we don't.
Yeah. So, yeah. I have the great fortune of loving it. Like, I'm a strength coach as well. So
yeah. Yeah. So since you started out with that, what do you tell the runners who, I mean, who are so, I mean, I don't know what you get as a coach, but, you know, I know that a lot of them is like, oh, just let me run.
It's one of those things. It's like eating your vegetables, or like, I mean, we don't all love eating vegetables all the time, but you want them part of your diet, or staying hydrated, or just one of those things that you know is going to make you better for it, I guess. I don't always get excited about, you know, eating broccoli or spinach, but it's like it needs to be a staple in your routine in order to do your best and, you know, prevent injury. And I think if you've been injured once, or even had a scare at some point, or maybe you've gotten, you know, kind of like a niggle in your knee or your ankle or something, you have probably noticed the downfall of maybe not doing enough strength. That was one thing I'm really grateful for, is I didn't feel it in my quads at all, or my hamstrings. It was more like my feet were tired by the end of the 50. But I think the strength training really plays a key role, especially as you get into more mountainous terrain and more trail. And I wouldn't be afraid of the extra muscle either, because if you're running that much and you're only doing, I mean, really, most runners are going to strength train twice a week, full body, for maybe 30 to 40, 50 minutes. And I'm naturally more muscular, so sure, I'm going to be muscular, but like, I don't think it's going to, for runners that are worried about bulking up, that's not really a concern with all the amount of volume you're doing in terms of running, and how much it's going to, how far it's going to go to, especially to help your lower body.
So what about upper body strength training? Maybe is that an important for
I do
people
think
who think, oh, all I need to do is some squats and lunges and I'll be good.
Yeah. I mean, definitely our core holds us upright. So doing some core, in terms of planks and the ability to hold yourself up. And then I do think the ability to, you know, especially doing back, because a lot of runners will start to cave forward at the end of hard or long runs. So, you know, getting all those muscle groups, but I think maybe having a little bit greater emphasis on lower body and legs, and, you know, then just sprinkling in some upper body, certainly still important though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, this year was one that I said, I gave in and says, I need to work on my upper body, because it was like, I was always doing lower body. So, it's just, and it's made a difference. I can tell it makes a big difference. So one of the things I read on your Instagram, you had talked a little bit about the mindset and your why for running 50 miles. What was your reflections on that? What was the thing that you were thinking about when you did it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about everyone else, but I don't normally run with headphones. So that gives you a lot of time to just think out there, you know, and get lost in your thoughts. And it can be good, but it also can be challenging during those tough moments. So for me, it was kind of thinking about, like, why in the world am I out here doing this? You know, especially around mile, I don't know, 35 or 40, I started to get like, all right, I've been out here long enough. You know, it's been what, 7-8 hours. And I was like, I'm ready to be done. You know, you get to that point, and I think for everybody, it's going to be different on a different day too. But for me, I was like, it's hot. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or so. And, you know, I'm just ready to be done. And why, like, what is keeping me out here? And kind of going back to your why, you know, I was realizing, okay, well, part of it was actually to kind of prove not only to myself, but I think to others in my life, like, I can do this, you know, I got this. And, you know, having the support and influence socially was a factor for sure. Friends being like, what's your next race? Or yeah, go for this 50, you know? So, you know, you have that support in like a positive way. I wasn't trying to like prove anyone wrong or, you know, show anyone up, but I think it's more like knowing that it's not just for me. I also have an athlete that's training for a 50 coming up, and knowing that by me doing this distance, I'm instilling the confidence, not only in myself, but also kind of in her, not to give up. Right. Mm-hmm. 'Cause how would it look if I just, you know, coach just gives up in the middle of a 50. I'm like, I can't do that. So I think, you know, that really helped drive me forward to think about those other forces in my life and the fact that it wasn't just extrinsic for them either. It was also for me internally, to make that commitment to myself to finish the race and, you know, stay strong through it. So yeah, I think those are good points to consider though, is like, why, like, what is your why? And it better be good, because if it's not, then it might not keep you out there.
So that was one thing. Was there anything else to be, I mean, that's kind of the foundation. Was there anything else that you used to kind of get through that point where it was like, that idea of like, I should quit it, you know, no matter what the distance is, you're going to face that sometimes a couple of times in an ultra marathon, especially.
Certainly. I think you might've commented too about just getting to the next aid station, dividing the race up. I love to just do the mental math in my head and think, all right, just get through these next 10. I kind of didn't make the mistake though. I was like, if you get through 30 or 40, like the last 10 will take care of themselves. And that was so not true. So I kind of should have had another mental strategy. But that was one, was kind of just to divide the race up and just piece by piece, aid station by aid station, you know, and focus on different segments, getting through this next uphill or this next downhill. And then another one would be, I almost lost my train of thought here. Okay, so finding your why, dividing the course up. I swear I had another one that you may have asked me about. Oh, talking to yourself in the third person. So that's actually been proven to be a strategy that I actually first heard about it through Shalane Flanagan, who we probably all know of, the pro marathoner. She talks to herself, and we're not related, by the way. We have the same last name, but I don't think we are. But she, you know, she had said, yeah, I talk like, hey, Shalane, come on, you got this, talks to herself in that way. And it really does kind of help sort of get out of your own head in a way, because you're kind of cheering yourself on when you don't have anyone else out there. So for me, I was like, all right, Megan, you got this, let's go. You know, you just kind of talk to yourself in that way, like a coach would or a close friend cheering for you. And that's also been proven in the book. There's a book called Chatter that's fairly new that has some data on that. I don't know all the science myself, but I do know that it works, both from personal experience and the research out there. So
yeah, and that's something that I'm just getting started to kind of dig into. It came across a gentleman that I'm going to be talking to for the podcast. Is part of his YouTube, or is part of his Instagram. He had a YouTube link, and he was doing a presentation, and that was part of his presentation on sports psychology. And so he had the references. I haven't had a chance to go and look at it, but this idea of talking to yourself because the whole thing of affirmations, I mean, that's been around for the self-talk and affirmations, been around for a long time. And I've always heard it done in the first person. And I had started kind of thinking that it wasn't as powerful as it should be, the self-talk. And so when you said that, and just thinking about this topic, is that it seems that when other people tell you something, it's hard to if someone says something negative to you, you can try to do self-talk saying, well, no, that's not true. But it seems that there's more power from their words than your own self-talk. And so the idea of talking to yourself in the second person, it actually makes sense that it would be more powerful, because I have a hard time when someone says something negative to me, I have a hard time counteracting it by just my own internal dialogue. Well, no, you know, that's, you know, it's like of saying, I know that's not true. I'm not that person.
Right.
And it just, it seems to be less effective. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's super interesting. There's I'm giving a call out for this, but there's an upcoming book by Addie Bracey, who's also a pro ultra runner, called Mental Training Essentials for Ultra Running, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Might be coming out in June, but I'm fascinated and can't wait to dive into that, because I'm sure just tying it, making those connections between mental performance and running will be really helpful.
So do you, when you're training, do you have a regimen of something that you do to prepare yourself mentally? Or is mental work part of your normal training regimen?
I would say somewhat. Yeah, I definitely am an advocate for visualization. I try to do some of that, or some guided meditations that kind of get you to reflect on sport and life and performance. I also, keep a journal or a notebook at times, and in my training logs, try to reflect on the positives for the day and what went well and how I kind of progressed through those tougher moments. But gosh, I don't know. I think about my friends too, and just having other people out there can be a great influence, just to hear the words that come out of their mouth and how they support you. And, it can be so hard if you're just doing all your training by yourself. I think you have to put in twice the amount of effort to stay positive versus friends that are oh, you're feeling tired. Come on, you got it. You mm-hmm. kind of get that support along the way. So I think training for both scenarios, right? Because you're not always going to be around people, and those long distances, you got to be ready to be on your own too. But, that can be great to pick you up on those hard days too.
And you finished your 50 probably before sunset then.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We started pretty early, at 6 a.m. So I was done afternoon. Yeah.
So have you done any overnight races, any nighttime?
I have not yet. No, okay. I'm not a huge, huge fan of at Mount Hood, actually, Timberline Trail, we were worried we finished right before sunset. So, and in general, though, I don't do so well running in the dark. I mean, it's okay, but I know it's just part of the distance if you do a long one.
Yes. Yeah. For the 100 miles, even the fastest runners are going to be out there, in the dark. And
yeah, I have a couple of friends doing I Am Tough out in McCall, Idaho in September. So it's going to be a fun one. I hear it's really hard. That's the name. Yeah.
Yeah. And it varies. I mean, you can find mm-hmm. races that are just super technical and, just very, 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 very difficult. And there's mm-hmm. Something to be said for that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know, they make you stronger.
Yeah. So, yeah. And being by yourself in the dark, out in the woods, there's a lot of mental work that adds an extra aspect of what you have to say to yourself when you're out there. And it helps when if you can see other people, but yeah, it's I've been in some overnight races, and some of them are even 50Ks. I mean, there's a 50K that, in fact, the ones I'm doing this year, both of the 50Ks I'm doing start at 8 o'clock at night. We run through the night.
Oh, wow. So you're choosing to run through the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And so it's, one of them is going to be a little easier. It's on they're both looped courses, but one's a 5K loop. And so mm-hmm. I imagine I'd see a lot of people again, and you come into the aid station a lot more often, but there's one that's a 10-mile, three 10-mile loops. And so it's pretty lonely out there.
Oh yeah. You know? I imagine. Yeah.
But you were a psychologist. You majored in psychology. Is that something that you brought into your training as well?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'd say psychologist, but sports psychology has always fascinated me. And I think, yeah, it's certainly part of my training and something I think I try to incorporate with athletes is what are those mental skills that we need to work through, and those hard moments or those barriers or blocks that might get in your way, and how I think we need to treat mental training just like we do physical, and just make it more of a part of our routine.
Yeah. So you mentioned visualization earlier, and I know I went through a time when I heard people talk about visualization in athletics, I kind of went, yeah, that's just new age foo-foo stuff. So how, in your experience, how does it work for you and for the people that you've, is there a quantifiable difference that you can say, yes, this makes a difference in my life? And I guess, or some practical how-tos to make it work.
Yeah, that's, I think the making it work, it's kind of hard to like fit a square peg into a round hole in terms of like training is different for different people, and same with mental performance. Like some people will love visualization, some people might just not use it as much, which is fine. It's something I did growing up, like coaches would have us do on teams of, you know, lay down and relax and just kind of at the end of a session, like think about how your race is going to go tomorrow, you know, the gun kicks off. And so maybe it's more something you kind of rehearse through your head of how the race is going to go, or you kind of see yourself in your best light. You want to probably imagine some of those hard moments and how you're going to overcome them. So it's almost like this dress rehearsal in your head, I think, of how it's going to go, is how I see it. But of course, I think it's kind of dependent on the person and how they want to go about that, right? So it's not just imagining rainbows and sunshine the whole time. Like, yeah, how are you going to be out there? How is it going to be?
Yeah, and I thought I should clarify for that, because I kind of came from that I just like, oh, and that just sounds so, that sounds so like,
It does. It sounds so, yeah, lovely and nice. Yeah.
yeah, I was like, okay, let's just imagine sweetness and
Yeah.
light.
Yeah.
And just, does it work better for a person who is more visually cute? Because I know there are people who do better with what they call auditory.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you
Words are more
have.
important.
Right. The words are more important, or I'm certainly a visual person, so I think that does help me to have that mental imagery. And if you're kind of a do it person, I mean, I'm not really sure what I'd say then, just kind of rehearse it yourself. But yes, maybe having some guided, you know, some kind of guided visualization where they're talking to you or you're repeating mantras or something along those lines could be useful. But again, I guess I'm not totally practicing in sports psych, so not sure what more advice to give other than what I do, but yeah.
And so the you know, so for some people, visualization might work better than others, and the mantras might be a better thing for people who are more auditory. And I think
Definitely.
and the do it or the kinesthetic people, I don't know what they I don't know what they would need. But
Yeah.
so what is your I guess, do you have any bucket list races or goals that you would like, that you're headed toward?
Yeah, you know, I think one of them has been Tarawera or Tarawera out in
Yes.
New Zealand. I would love to do, you know, something at least 100K to 100 miles out there would be lovely. I'd love to do that. You know, I've been eyeing the Bear 100 out in Logan, Utah. I have kind of my heart there because I lived there for a while and love it. Or something else at high altitude, maybe Pikes Peak, out in Colorado. You know, these are just some bucket list races I want to do for sure. I'd love to break three in the marathon too. The road marathon for me is so painful just to hold that pace. But I have a 308 and I'm like, you know, just minutes away. Like I can do this. I mean, I know it's a full 8 minutes, but yeah, would love to go back and work at that. So it's potential. But I think trail and ultra is really where I want to continue to grow. And as for this year, I have some shorter races on the schedule, shorter, faster, more competition, which is exciting, like really getting out there with big dogs, you know. And not that I wasn't, I mean, everybody in the race is great, but you know, when you're first female, sometimes I'm like, the race was pretty small, you know, and it's nice to see a lot of other women out there crushing and just tons of people in general that are really getting after it. So yeah, maybe branching off into some bigger races too.
Are you fairly competitive when you're out on the trail?
A little. Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice to know how you fare. Like it's amazing to finish first or in the top few in your distance or in a smaller race, right? To kind of see where you fare. But I certainly like to challenge myself and be out there with people and people I work with and admire. So I'm part of this Chosky Endurance Collective, and a bunch of coaches are going to be at Narnar in August, which is just a 7 mile uphill battle, and Oregon and Mount Hood, and then also Broken Arrow Sky Race, which I'm going to be in the 26K in October, but they also have a 52K. So, you know, those are a couple big ones where it's exciting. I think it's inspiring to me to see people, not just for the competition for myself, but even just to be out there running with people I've admired and respected and running, I think is pretty cool. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So you enjoy that type of pushing yourself and
Yeah, I think it comes from being an athlete growing up. So, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not super competitive. I've let people, like best friends of mine, finish before me because I've wanted to keep the peace. So I don't mean to sound like I'm like ready to go, you know, crush everybody, but I just like to be out there with other people who are getting the most out of themselves and inspiring me in the process. So,
Yeah. So cool. Tarawar, what brought Tarawar to your, on your radar? What's the appeal for?
Well, New Zealand.
New Zealand.
New Zealand in general just looks incredible and very jungle-like. And the other one actually I didn't mention is CCC, Chaminade Lookout. And in Europe. So, I don't know a ton about these enough to, you know, give everyone the whole rundown, but I'd encourage you to go to the websites and look at the photos because it certainly makes me want to do some of these races internationally.
Eugene, and I can't remember his last name, Dirt Church Radio is a podcast, and they're both based in New Zealand, and have run the Tarawara.
Oh, very neat.
He wrote for the New Zealand paper. There was a runner out there who almost died from a
wow.
It was rare kind of for runners, and I can't remember exactly the. I probably shouldn't have even mentioned it since I can't remember the details, but
still, that's
but, great. But yeah, he wrote about a runner that had a medical condition by not hydrating correctly.
And it
sparked this. And he got my attention from the article and mm-hmm. then talked to him. And he said that's they were looking forward to COVID opening up the Tarawara, but you get this cool, it's a little carving, a little stone carving instead of a buckle.
Nice.
You know, there's a lot of traditions in that race that it sounds like a fun one to do.
Yeah, that'll be really exciting.
But it is jungle and humid and rather warm. So.
Yeah. Very fun.
We'll be a lot different than Colorado or the Pacific Northwest.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, well, that is cool. I didn't have anything else. Do you have any other comments or things that you would like to? I mean, you've offered on your Instagram, you've offered all kinds of great advice for runners, and so I would encourage anybody who's listening to this podcast to look you up on Instagram, just because. So, do you coach locally, or do you have? If someone wanted to work with you as a coach, kind of who's your client? Who's your ideal client?
So thanks for mentioning that. I'm going to have to turn those Instagrams into blog posts for those that don't have Instagram. I'm like, I'm sorry, or podcasts or something. But I have a podcast as well, Strong Runner Chick Radio, that I share a lot of advice on. And it kind of centers around my passion for empowering female or women distance runners to really get more women into the sport of running. So that said, I coach mostly women, and especially those that are training for their first, maybe, or first, second, third, you know, early on in their trail running journey. I also coach a few for road, I would say, but, you know, really passionate about bringing more people into trails and ultras and, you know, some of those earlier distances. And so, I've only done up to 50 miles, but I've coached anybody from 5K to 50 miles, basically. So
yeah.
Kind of a wide range. And that's probably the best way to connect with me is on Instagram. And, you know, would love to speak to anyone that's interested. I have a few roster spots open now.
Do you have, you say primarily women. And so, there are women who would look at kind of your times, and you're a lot of women who are starting out would look at you as an elite athlete. Do you offer like the whole range for helping people if they're just, you know, if they're a back of the pack runner?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I hate to ever intimidate anyone, because I think we've all been there where we're on the starting line of a race, super intimidated or new to the sport. And so I've coached people from couch to 5K. I mean, everywhere in between, and just, definitely coach beginners and all levels. So, and I don't consider myself elite by any means, though. I love to coach people just getting started.
Well, I know that, that intimidation is a big factor for a lot of people. You know, I hear people say, you know, that just that there's a lot of anxiety for lining up on a race. And you as an athlete, you know, have been doing it for a long time. And I think there'd be people who would look at you and go, oh my goodness, she's got it all together.
oh, maybe, but I'm just like, yeah, so don't think that ever.
is that something that you have seen in a lot in women? I mean, women ask the athletes who look at the sport and say, oh, it's just a bunch of guys running fast and there's not a place there for me.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's why we need more women to help lead the way and get more, you know, involvement in the sport. I would just say, anything can seem intimidating at first, but until you give it a try and see what you're made of and get out there, just know that everybody's supporting you. I mean, people want to see you succeed. And so, yeah, there's a lot of help and a lot of support, and it doesn't matter how slow you go. Like, you know, it's just about getting after it and getting out there.
Yeah. And I know that the women trail runners that I know are, they're tough. I mean, they just, and a lot of times they're tougher than men. I mean, they just will keep on going.
trails make you tough.
Sorry, I pulled my earplug out.
Oh, you're so fine.
And then in the sport, there's been some conversations of how the longer the distance goes, the more women can actually compete head to head with men.
Pain threshold really can go up, and just ability to utilize fat as fuel too with that. So,
So what's about the best way is to find you on Instagram. And then your podcast is The Strong Runner Chick, is right?
Strong Runner Chicks.
I put the Strong Runners. I can't remember. I was trying to find your podcast.
Strong Runner Chick Radio.
Yeah. Strong Runner Chick Radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, kind of a long one, but yeah, that's us. And then yeah, on Instagram at Megan Spire. So Megan, it's my Spire. Name for now. Yeah.
And you offer a lot of good advice to runners and inspiration of both men and women. And so.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I hope to continue, and I encourage anyone to reach out. Don't be intimidated. I love to chat with new runners and veterans alike.
So. Yeah. And you, the information, the stuff that you offer is great for any level of runner. I appreciate that. So, blog is, you say you think you might be starting a blog as well, or?
I have a website. So meganspire.com, and I used to post blogs, but I'm like, who reads blogs anymore? You know, but apparently people do. So, you know, when you Google something, I can write a long article and go on a topic. And I realize the Instagram posts are kind of turning into blogs. So might as well just put it out there in a way that's more easily legible than through a gram, you know, a little post.
Yeah. Instagram has, I know a lot of people who do use it as a blog, but it has its limitations for that too. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you a lot for being part of this. This
Thanks podcast. For having me on. It was great to chat with you and get to know you. Hope to see you at a race.
Appreciate it. Yeah. And you're going to be in Colorado. You're moving to Colorado, right?
I sure am. Yeah.
My sister lives there.
I might
head out that direction sometime. And
it's a good place to be. Yeah. Get some miles in. Yeah.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it, Megan.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Hopefully I can meet you in a race sometime when we're back to racing. So.
Yeah, likewise. All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks again. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset. Or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.